I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and if any of the issues that you hear today sound like something you'd like to discuss with me, at the end of the show, I'll let you know how you can connect with me. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Ed Wallace. Ed is the President and Chief Relationship Officer of the Relational Capital Group. He consults with and speaks for corporations and associations across the globe with a client list that is a who's who of Fortune 500 companies. Ed is the author of Fares to Friends, Creating Relational Capital, Business Relationships That Last, and his most recent, The Relationship Engine. In addition, Ed is currently on the executive education faculty of Drexel's LeBeau College of Business and Villanova University's Human Resources Master's Program. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, David. It's a real pleasure to be with you and your audience today.
It's great to have you on. So let's just cut to the chase. At a point when you were at a plateau, what were your dreams?
You know, it's really interesting, David. I was at my most successful point in my career when I hit a plateau. So I know that sounds a little counterintuitive, but I had everything that I had aspired to in my career. I was a senior executive of a technology company. I met regularly with the board of directors. I knew everyone in my industry. I had stock options and all the great stuff that goes along with what might be deemed as successful. And yet, I always sensed there was something else. I was a big fan of a book called The Road Less Traveled many, many years ago. And I always thought about, you know, am I really on the road less traveled or am I just regular? And so my plateau came to me when I was the most successful in a corporate career.
You know, that's actually not so unusual.
Okay, and, good. I'm not strange then.
Yeah, you know, particularly people who are very motivated, who are achievers. If you set certain objectives or goals and you achieve what you have set out to achieve, mm-hmm. and then you get to a plateau, and then you ask yourself, then what? What's next? Right?
And I've always thought I'm a journey guy. I'm not a destination guy. So I always enjoyed the struggle, the journey, the challenges, the thinking. No matter where I was, even as a student in college and high school, I always thought about, hey, this is great. And then when I got there, it did not feel as great as I thought it would feel. So I'm glad to hear I'm not alone in that.
Yeah. So to talk to me a little bit about that feeling, that doesn't feel as great as you think it should.
Well, it just feels that, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? Versus just pausing and maybe enjoying whatever it is you accomplished. I'm a walking, living, breathing paradox. I'm a CPA, but I've been in sales most of my career. There's a paradox right there. Whenever I achieve something, I would switch functions. So I reached a number one sales role, I switched into marketing. I achieved at that, I switched back into business development. So I don't know if it's a constant drive or what it is. Maybe it's an insecurity. Who knows? I don't know the psychology behind it. But can I share an event with you that actually helped me? You know, it was a cathartic moment in my life, our family's life, that really helped me realize, okay, you are truly at a plateau, even with all this success, and it's time to go really follow a dream. Would you mind if I shared a story with you?
Please, please. That's what the show is all about.
So on August 25th, 2006, I was supposed to be at one of our divisional offices in Florida, and my meetings got canceled. I was also scheduled to play golf that morning. That got postponed. So I wound up with a whole day in the office on a Friday afternoon in August. And I had a great morning, caught up on a bunch of stuff. And as I'm getting ready to go out to lunch, my desk phone rings, and it's my wife's cell phone. My wife's name is Laurie. And Laurie, I pick up, hey, honey, how you doing? She said, hey, I'm shopping. I'm a little further away. Can you get to our friend's home? Our son, Grant, who was 8 years old at the time, fell off his skateboard and he was upset. Sure, I'll just head right over there. And it was about 20 minutes from my office. So about 10 minutes into my ride, now my cell phone rings in the car. And it's my wife, Laurie, again. Now, Laurie was a trauma nurse in an emergency room in a city hospital. So not a lot of things shake her up. Her first comment was, don't go to our friend's house. Go to the helipad at the local community college. Grant, our son, is going to be medevaced to the children's hospital. My foot got a lot heavier at that point, David. And I wasn't worried about traffic. I wasn't worried about speeding fines. I just headed right on down to the community college where the helipad was. As I drive into the community college, it's this long, winding driveway. It's like I just couldn't get there. And as I got to the scene, I noticed the helicopter and the rotors are kind of like just slowly spinning. I notice an ambulance. I notice a fire truck. They always bring a fire truck, a police car, a bunch of people milling about, and a little boy in a stretcher by that ambulance with those blocks on his head, just like they do with the football players when they take them off the football field. I get out of the car and it feels like I'm running in sand or I'm in a dream and I'm signing releases. People are handing me things. The poor mom who was taking care of Grant was beside herself because she felt guilty because it happened at her house. Finally, I get to Grant and, you know, the first thing that went through my mind is Grant, you know, is he paralyzed? Is he alive? And he was in and out, but he has very ticklish feet. So and they had his sneakers off. So sure enough, I tickled the bottoms of his feet and his legs moved. So I thought, okay, well, at least he's not paralyzed. My wife, Laurie, gets there at that exact moment. And they just whisk her away in the helicopter. Grant's with her. And they're going to be at the Children's Hospital here in Philadelphia in 4 minutes. My older son, Brett, and I, we've got a 45-minute ride in a lot of traffic to try to get to this busy city hospital. So all the way down, my son, Brett, is kind of the voice of reason in the whole thing, that Grant's going to be okay, and he's got a hard head, and all this kind of stuff that's kind of funny now. As we get to the hospital, and this is one of the finest and busiest children's hospitals in the world, they funnel everybody into a giant parking garage. It's 10 stories. So we finally get a spot on the 8th or 9th floor. And then everybody kind of flows into this giant atrium where you have to take these escalators down to the bottom. And at the bottom, you go wherever you're going. So sure enough, Brett and I are running through the garage. We're running to the escalators. We're running down the escalator. At the base of the elevator, there's a woman there dressed more or less business casually. And she looked up and she says, would you be the Wallaces? I said, yes. She said, I came to take you to your son, Grant. He's stable, and he's not where you might have expected him to be. So let me take you to him. Fast forward, Grant had a severe concussion. He's fine today. He's actually a college baseball pitcher today. But that moment and my reflection on that moment got me thinking about the plateau that I was on. And that plateau was seize the moment. And one of the things I always wanted to, because if this can happen to an 8-year-old who's innocently playing on a skateboard, you know, how precious and how fluid are our lives. And one of the things I always wanted to do was author books, visit with organizations and provide talks and that they might find insightful and do training around all that. That was always kind of in the back of my vision because we, you know, I had so much professional development when I was in corporate roles that I always admired the people that did that. Kind of the same thing you do, Dave, right? And that was the moment when I said, I'm going to do it. You know, that weekend, once we found out Grant was going to be okay, I had that catharsis that, okay, you got to seize the day here. And, you know, the theme that I picked up from that whole experience, and I actually talk about this in this story. I tell this story in the preface of the new book, The Relationship Engine, is this whole concept of worthy intent. And worthy intent, there's two aspects of worthy intent. The first aspect is always putting the other person's best interest ahead of your own, which I believe most human beings are inclined to do. So I'm not suggesting to you and the people we work with and get to visit with that you got to get good intentions. I believe we do. The subtlety is, and in the relationship engine, we call it displaying worthy intent, is the response you get from your worthy intentions. So if we go back to the hospital, how many thousands of families go through there on a daily basis? How many kids are going through there? And yet that hospital system, they didn't have to do this, but they sent a representative, or the representative did it on their own. I'm not really sure. I don't really care. All I know is they had great intentions towards us. And the manifestation of those worthy intentions came back in the following ways. And that's what we call displaying worthy intent. We transferred every one of both our children's we transferred into that health system. We recommended that health system to anyone who asked us about specific doctors and specialists. Whenever they ask for some kind of contribution or attending an event, and guess what health system we support? So it's not that worthy intent is not around us. It's, are we seeing behaviors that are coming back to us that indicate from the people we're working with that we've got, that they recognize our good intentions? I appreciate letting me share that story with you.
Yeah, it's a very powerful story. And glad to hear that Grant is doing well 10 years later. It's almost exactly 10 years ago that this incident happened.
Yes. I gave a speech on this on the exact day. And what's really interesting, in the middle of the speech, I realized it was the exact day. I give so many speeches, and somebody in the audience said, that was today. I said, oh my gosh, that is today. And then they all clapped and I got a little emotional. But there's no leadership program, David, that can help you in the moment be prepared for when, you know, you see your son and your wife going off in a helicopter. And then when you get to the hospital, they hand you his clothes that they cut off his body and his sneakers in a plastic bag. There's just nothing that can prepare you for that. And again, it was one of those catharses that we have, that it helped me break through. And at that point, I worked with my CEO, who is, he just purchased 850 of the new books. So he's still a great friend, 10 years later. And I worked on a transition out of my role as a senior VP of the company. And after about 6 months, had no business plan, had nothing but a vision. So I did everything the wrong way, and I'm sure I probably invested more money than I should have along the way. But as I look back on that journey, I would not have changed a thing about it.
You know, that's really fascinating that that you had a vision.
That was it.
And making the comment now that you probably did everything the wrong way. Yet, I gather 10 years later, you are in a much better emotional space with regard to your business activities than you were prior to this incident. And I'm willing to bet that you also react to hitting a plateau, because we all hit plateaus at various points in our life, but I'm willing to bet that you react differently now than you would have before this happened.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when I hit a plateau now, I just write another book. That's how I get through my plateaus now. And as you probably know, a book is a 1,200-hour effort. There's a lot of distraction. You're never at peace with your thoughts. You could be watching your son pitch in a college game, or you might be at dinner with your spouse, and you all of a sudden drift off like, oh God, I got this paragraph and I'm trying to come up with this idea. And what's interesting, as painful as it is, once you finish something like a book, there's this empty feeling. And we were just fortunate. I mentioned earlier, the book just hit number one on Amazon for leadership. And it's kind of anticlimactic. I'm saying that as authentically as I can. It's a great kind of thrill, but I'm thinking, like, I think I want to do another book now. versus just enjoy this moment. So I think there's some psychology there, David, where I need a little help, you know, just to celebrate a few things sometimes instead of always looking for the next challenge.
Yeah, well, first of all, congratulations on your book hitting number one on Amazon. That's awesome.
Never would have thought that would have happened, but thank you, David.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, so you're raising a really interesting question, which is how do we take the space, allow ourselves the space to sit back and enjoy success while we're in a plateau?
And you know, I think a lot of the work you do, with your strategic partnerships, I think, as I understand some of your philosophy, I think reflecting on one of the things, you know, we do some coaching during our training with executives and high potential leaders and sales professionals. One of the things we recommend is that whenever they can, maybe every 2 weeks, once a week, but never less than once a month, make an appointment with yourself. And it's a sacred time in your calendar. Nothing interferes with that time. So it needs to be, okay, Friday afternoon, 3 to 5, or Monday morning, whenever it is. Maybe it's Sunday evening, but make an appointment with yourself and let everything you're doing wash over you. Just go someplace, maybe it's a coffee place, maybe it's a quiet place, and just do a little bit of reflection around the bigger picture of what's going on in your world and where you are chronologically. I know we talked a lot about, you know, mid-career folks, 40 to 60 years old. That's exactly where I was when Grant fell off that skateboard. I was 45, going on 46 years old at that point. And I think we have to find that time to just think about everything we have going on. Stay away from our email and all the electronic things that are going on. Stay away from people for 2 hours and just think through and let your business wash over you. I had a very successful client of mine worth hundreds of millions of dollars. That's where I got this idea from. He said he always called me Edward, and he's a lot older now. Edward, he'd say, go find a place and close your eyes and let your business wash over you. He had this kind of twangy voice. And I'll tell you, I do it. And it's not when I'm driving the car. If our listeners here can think about that, make some time to reflect. And that's when I celebrate things, by the way, David, to get back to your one of your original premises there. I actually celebrate things privately. And like, hey, you know what? That's pretty amazing that happened. And if all these things didn't happen, this wouldn't be happening right now. Steve Jobs did a great talk, in the past tense, at Stanford. And everybody can find that talk online. But he talks about being a vision guy and not trying to connect all the dots until you reach where you're headed. It didn't seem like he was one for detailed business plans. And so he advises these Stanford students to, look back after it's done, whether it's positive or negative, and then try to connect the dots, lessons learned, positive things that came from it versus all these detailed steps. When I was leaving my job as vice president of that technology company, the CEO says, well, let's go over your business plan. I said, well, I don't have a business plan. He said, well, why are you making this move then? I said, well, because if I take the time to build a business plan, I'll probably scare myself back into keeping my job with you. Not that that wouldn't be a bad thing, and I'll never do this. And he says, well, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to write a book about a cab driver. He said, you're going to write a book about a cab driver, and you're going to support your young family. Like, he was really skeptical. And I said, yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do. And the cab driver's been in two additional books. The publishers love him. His name is Max, real person. I was thinking about, who's been very influential in my life. This guy, Max, who I rode around with when I was a very young sales professional, back when I switched out of accounting. I always like to say I'm a recovering accountant. I hope your audience doesn't mind that comment. When I switched into sales, my father passed away. I was about 30 years old, and we just had our first baby. That's Brett. Grant had not come around yet, and you lose your father. You've got a mortgage and all the things everybody has, and these worries and concerns and this kind of lack of this male figure in your life. And this cab driver named Max all of a sudden comes into my life and starts serving me back and forth to the airport. And there's some very interesting interactions I had with him. And we base a lot of what we share about creating competitor-proof experiences for other human beings from my rides with this cab driver named Max.
Ed, you shared some really interesting and thought-provoking personal stories.
Oh, thank you.
And I really appreciate the fact that you've done it. I think this. I think you've added a lot that our listeners can chew on. If you are in one of these transition points that you've described, and you're not quite sure what to do, even if you're, I guess your emotions or your instinct or whatever you want to call it is telling you to pursue a particular kind of vision like you've described. Mm-hmm. If you feel that you need some guidance to be able to have the wherewithal to move forward in a direction that will be helpful to you, where's a good place to go for help? What have you found has mm-hmm. been helpful to you when you've been at some of these transition points?
Well, you know, the first thing, David, the comment I'd like to make before I answer your question is, if you feel like you need to go for something, don't wait for your child to fall off a skateboard to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's a great piece of advice.
Don't wait for some event that shakes you to your core to make that move. If you have this feeling, I think it's really important for you to take some action around it. I'm not saying, hey, just up and quit your job without any idea of what you're going to do like Ed Wallace did. I'm very lucky that worked out, okay? But I think everybody's different. To get back to your question, I love people. And my kids tell me that. My wife tells me that. I will talk to the person at the Walmart, at the checkout counter, as long as they'll talk to me. I just love people. So in my case, I find the people who are not going to just say, yeah, Ed, go for it. They're going to challenge my thinking, like my former CEO. They're going to also support my thinking, like my wife, who just thinks I walk on water when it comes to business, and whatever I decide is going to work out. So you have these two, you know, and then you find the people in the middle. And again, like what you do in your business, David, you know, you're those type of people. There are experts like you who can help with something like this. But I believe that we've all had a Max in our life. Max, the cab driver, became a mentor to me. And we all have that Max. Maybe it's an uncle. And they're the people, I find they're also very effective when they're removed from what you're doing. And you just have this authentic discussion with them about how you're feeling. So my suggestion is, you know, look into the people you know. There's a lot of wisdom, and sometimes it may be with a grandparent who has no idea what you're doing in business, but they know you, and they know how they might be able to help you with asking you the right questions. And I find the best support comes when we're asked questions and not just, you know, fully support, yeah, go for it, all this kind of stuff. So hope that helps.
That's great. That's a great answer. So I wonder if we could shift now and talk a little bit about somebody else. And I wondered if you could describe somebody you know personally who has been successful at smashing plateaus.
Well, you know, the person whose name pops into my head is Chris Malone. And Chris is, he's had an incredible career. He's worked for the NBA. He's worked for the NHL Players Association. He's worked for Coca-Cola. He's worked for Fleer baseball cards. He's always been involved in business to consumer marketing, and was the chief marketing officer of a company called Aramark, the large stadium management and cafeteria company, and they're in higher ed and grade schools. And he reached a plateau where he realized, I guess Chris was probably around his early 40s when this happened. And I was kind of going through my transition as well. And he realized, you know, yeah, I'm going to be the CMO here for 5 years, and I'm going to get a better position to be the CMO somewhere else for 5 years, and I'm going to get another position to be a CMO somewhere else for 5 years. And that's fine. And there's, you know, we've talked about this. We're not making any value judgment on how someone wants to spend the 80, 85 years we have on this planet and how they want to spend their career. But Chris was hitting a plateau. It was more of the same, just for more money. And he was fine financially at that point. And he did a similar thing to what I did. And he wrote a book called The Human Brand with a professor from Princeton. Her name is Dr. Susan Fisk. And Dr. Fisk is the current authority. And when I say current, it's because the work they're doing has been going on for 60 years. Chris is now part of that work. She's the current authority on this concept of warmth and competence. And warmth and competence goes back to when we were primitive. No matter what we believe about where we came from, I think everybody will agree at one point we were less primitive than we are today. We were more primitive than we are today, sorry. And what they've studied over the last 60 years, and as I said, Dr. Fisk is the current steward of this study, is that when we were primitive and someone approached us in the forest, we didn't really care about how good they were at the club they were holding. We cared about what their intentions were to us. Are they warm or are they not warm? And this whole theory of warmth and competence, believe it or not, is still baked into our DNA these thousands of years later. So when I approach you, David, you approach me, inside of me, I'm wondering, what are David's intentions here? Is he trying to, not that you ever would, is he trying to get something from me? Is he trying to sell me something? Is he trying to influence me around something? So our first reaction, our first feeling is that, okay, what are his intentions? And if David has a warm intention towards me, now warm doesn't mean touchy-feely per se. It may mean the way you ask questions are so honest and they're so well thought through. That's a warm intention. And what Chris and Dr. Fisk have written about in The Human Brand is this whole idea that this is where worthy intent comes from. And we actually get quoted in there about, every leadership program from the beginning of time, it starts with people having good intentions towards others. So I've seen Chris break through. He's got an incredible consulting firm today, works with large companies on brand loyalty and the relationships that are needed to get involved in that. And I would say, and he has no intention to go back to being a CMO. With all deference to all the great CMOs in the world, he just reached that plateau and said, "You know what? I'm going to go do my own thing and see if I can help at another level."
That's a great example of somebody who has smashed the plateau. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
And Ed, turning things back to you for a minute, what are you up to now? What do we have to look forward to from you in the near future?
Well, you know, we've been very fortunate, David, over the last 10 years to grow a nice company here. And we've worked with a ton of Fortune 500 companies on helping mostly their sales teams build better business relationships. And it's really ironic that we actually get paid to help people that should be great at relationships to be great at relationships. The difference is, and the reason we're successful and we've been able to help them be successful, is we actually talk about relationships in terms of a process. We talk about them in terms of measurement versus, oh, here's David, he's just great with people, we'll hire him. That's fine. How do we actually now get the most out of David's personality? Maybe David is very technically astute. How do we help David build warm relationships with people so they can really understand that technical stuff is really going to help us? So we got approached by Amicom about 2 years ago, and they say, all this stuff you're doing with customer-facing people is really relevant to leadership. And think about it. Every successful leader is great at relationships. So they commissioned me or signed me up or paid me a royalty, whatever you want to call it, to a retainer to write a book on how leaders can get better at relationships. Think about leadership today. It's a very complex world. You've got hierarchy colliding with cross-function within large companies. You've got boomers and gens and millennials. How does that all work? And how does it not just collapse? When you really think about it, we can have all the great processes in the world, but if we're not great at relationships, those distinct lines between the processes break down. So we wrote the relationship engine, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, and we're moving now into the whole world of leadership development. So that's another 10 years, David. And then, you know, who knows where I'll be. But that's where we're headed now.
That sounds great. So how can listeners learn more about you and follow what you're up to?
You can link in with me at Ed Wallace. My email is edwallace@relcapgroup.com. Website is www.relationalcapitalgroup.com. You can do a hashtag at relcapgroup. We're all over the Amicom websites. You know, you can find us in a lot of different places. So feel free to reach out. Looking forward to getting an email from someone and saying, hey, I heard John David's program. So those are probably the best places.
Sounds great. Well, Ed, thank you so much for coming on the show today and having a really great discussion about what it takes to smash the plateau, why you should do it, how to do it, and just some great stories. So thank you so much for joining us today on Smashing the Plateau.
Great. You're welcome, David. My pleasure.
My guest today has been Ed Wallace, President and Chief Relationship Officer of the Relational Capital Group. Thanks again, Ed, for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks, David.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.